You're listening to Circle of Hope's Sunday Meeting Podcast. This talk was given at 2214 South Broad Street. For more information, check out circleofhope.net or join us in person on Sunday evenings at 5 and 7 p.m.
We're talking about the beautiful things that Jesus does and the beautiful things that Jesus makes. And one of those things is, without a doubt, Frank Fuchs. This is Frank Fuchs. He's our newest cell leader, or one of them. I don't know. Zoe's on the screen this week. When did you guys multiply, Zoe? I think Frank was longer ago, so Zoe's the newest cell leader. But Frank just became a cell leader, and I got to baptize him last month, too, over in the Wissahickon. And I just love him. Frank lives in Sicklerville. Anybody know where Sicklerville's at? Yeah? All right. Confident yeses. We got some Jersey folk in here. Last meeting, I don't know, there were more people. I didn't get to see everyone's face, but they didn't know anything about Sicklerville. So the ones of y'all that don't know anything about South Jersey, this vast unknown territory to the east across the Delaware River, this is Sicklerville. Y'all know this way, 42, Atlantic City Expressway, that's how you get to the beach. You go through all of this to get to the part of Jersey that matters. I'm developing a Jersey chip on my shoulder because I'm new there. I've only been there for like a year and a few months. But I like chips, like those chips over there, but also like chips on your shoulder. So I'm getting into the shade on you Philly people, even though I've been in Philly my whole life. So one day in January 2015, before I became the pastor at our congregation over in South Jersey, I was feeling this call to move to South Jersey to do this strange thing. I went and I wanted to get the welcome from all these places that I had so left in mystery for my whole Philadelphia existence. You know, so I went to a lot of the towns that are in South Jersey because I just want to kind of get my head around the place, get my heart around the place, and actually receive a welcome. Y'all know that, like, welcome signs that towns have? Our town has welcome signs, Philadelphia. You know, you ever come into the city and see one of those? That's like the branded thing for coming into Philadelphia. I was looking for the best welcome to Philadelphia sign is when you come over the Tacony-Palmyra Bridge. There's an overpass that says in red, white, and blue, "Welcome to Philadelphia." And you know, Google failed me. Google did not have an image of that overpass, at least not in my Google foo. Couldn't find it, so I had to go with this one, which isn't as good. However, better than probably any of the Philadelphia signs are all of these signs. These are the 41 municipalities that are within 20 minutes of our building that we own on 3800 Marlton Pike. South Jersey should be one town, you know, as Philadelphia is concerned. But there's all these towns, like Riverside, New Jersey. I was born in Riverside, California. There's a Riverside, New Jersey, too. Yeah, there's a river in Riverside, California. It's called the Santa Ana. You can jump over it when you're 7. Wait, Josh, where do you live? Right here. This is Voorhees, right there. It says real small, Voorhees and Evesham. Anyway, Jersey has a lot of these different towns, and I got to know them, wanted to get the welcome, wanted to cross all those barrier lines, because I think that Jesus is a real barrier-crossing kind of guy. He wants us to get into lots of different places, and he does it in the Gospels, and we're going to take a look at that tonight. But here's the thing. Jesus shows up in places we don't expect, because guess where Frank lives? Frank lives in Sicklerville. You already knew that. And it is outside my 20-minute zone. In traffic, it's 38 minutes from Sicklerville up to 3800 Marlton Pike. So Frank was out. Frank was beyond the pale. Frank was in a place that didn't exist to me. I didn't even go to the town and take my picture by the welcome sign. And I haven't remedied that either. I've been to Sicklerville like one time. Frank needs to have me over. I thought that Sicklerville was too far. It's too far. We're not going to connect anyone from there. Circle of Hope isn't going to get into that far away territory. But there's Frank. And his new cell is like way on the edge of what I had imagined. You know, I imagined, what if God wanted to have a cell in every one of those 41 municipalities? Well, he did. And Sicklerville, you know, and other places too that are outside of what I had imagined. I thought maybe it would take too much for people to get all the way up there, to cross all those barriers, to get into Pensacola and on the edge of Camden, no less. It's kind of, you know, there's a divide in the way it goes. People that live up here closer to Camden might be more comfortable, but the further you get out, the more country it gets, and there's more boundaries. I didn't think people were going to cross all those lines. Not for Jesus, though. He's in Sicklerville already, of course, and everywhere else. But when he was walking around the Middle East with his disciples, he managed to get into a lot of different places just in like a human body. He got around. Jesus shows up everywhere, and people are always chasing after him. Sometimes Jesus tries to go somewhere just to like hide, to like get away from people, but they find him. Like we were talking about last week, Rachel was talking about how they dug a hole in a roof to get to him. Jesus can't seem to get by himself for very long. And he keeps moving, but I don't think it's because he wants to be alone all the time. But I think he doesn't want to leave anyone alone. He doesn't want to leave anyone without him, so he needs to get into a lot of different places. Mark 7 is this really particularly border-crossing chapter in the gospel written by Mark. It starts with the Pharisees. They're this group of powerful religious people that are in the center of power down in Jerusalem, and they go up to Jesus' hometown basically just to troll the guy, basically just to watch him and say, "Ah! You did the wrong thing." And, you know, Jesus puts them in their place, of course, and then moves on to Tyre and Sidon. Maybe we should get a map up here for this. So here's Israel in the, like, modern day world. This little spot right here, famously only the size of New Jersey. Same square, same, like, area. And then kind of puts you, have an idea of where Israel is on the map. And then here's a zoom in on a more ancient map. Here he is up in Tyre. He lives right around the Sea of Galilee right here, and that's where the Pharisees came to troll him. Then he goes up here, and he's in Tyre and Sidon, and this woman who is of Syro-Phoenician descent, essentially just not Jewish, convinces him to heal her daughter. And, you know, that was like a big moment. You know, Jesus was listening to her, and he was impressed by her faith. But then he moves over into the region of the Decapolis. This area up here, like traditionally, if you go back to some of the promises in the Old Testament, even Tyre is still in traditional Israel. Like, this is like the Golan Heights and stuff that are like under dispute as to whether this belongs to Israel. If you guys are involved in current Israeli politics, you'll recognize the sound of Golan Heights. But anyway, he gets over here into the Decapolis on the other side of the Jordan River, and now he's in definitive not Jewish territory. He's gotten out of Israel. And to kind of add insult into injury, this region, the Decapolis, it's these 10 cities. One of them is Philadelphia, Woot. They were like kind of just podunk villages. But then when the Hasmonean Empire rose to power, the Hasmoneans were like 200 years before Jesus. They had a violent revolution. They overthrew the oppressors, and they were Jewish rulers for a hot minute in history. It was like, yes, we finally won. But then, of course, they got crushed by another empire. And this has been happening forever. Don't worry. That's just what happens when you're Israel, unfortunately. And one of the people that came in, they were really into this Greek culture, and they wanted to develop. We need some places that matter more than Jerusalem. We need some places that kind of can counterbalance this kind of center of culture and commerce. So we're going to essentially create these cities out of nothing and build them up and invest a lot of money in them so that they can be the center of power in this region of the world. So the Decapolis is this whole like kind of culture bending project to try to decentralize the people of Israel as a force in the region. So when Jesus crosses over, it's not like he's just leaving his hometown or leaving his home country. He's also moving towards people that are obviously oppressors, that are supplanters of the Jewish idea that has faith and land and God's promise kind of all mixed into a geopolitical religious stew, okay? So everything he does has meaning. Even where he goes has meaning. So this place, the Decapolis, maybe just because it sounds like it, but also because it's this kind of bound together city culture place, reminded me of the place we live, the megalopolis. Polis means city. You know about Boswash? You know, this whole strip of super concentrated people across the Northeast. We live in a place a lot like the Decapolis. The Decapolis wasn't an religious place. It wasn't like void of religion. There was a lot of religion there, the religion of the Roman Empire, but it was decidedly not the religion that worshiped God of the Israelites. I think that our megalopolis is becoming more of an antagonistic place for faith. Folks are saying, you might hear on TV or Facebook or something about how more and more people are not identifying with any religious affiliation. Like before they might've said, yeah, I'm a Presbyterian because my mom and dad baptized me. And they like kind of kept that label, even if they didn't have a whole lot of faith their own. Now they're saying, nah, I'm nothing. That's like okay now. It didn't used to be okay in our Christian nation. I'm doing air quotes for those that can't see. 25% of the population says that they have no religious affiliation, and it's even higher for folks that are younger. The younger generation is more and more not affiliated with any religion. So Decapolis, Megalopolis, I think they have a lot in similarity. I think Jesus showing up right here in our center, see how we're in this circle around this symbol of Jesus? That's kind of unexpected too, you know? Who would have thought that a funeral home would be a place that Jesus is going to show up, a place that people were going to make a circle of hope right here on Broad Street, right in the middle, smack dab in the middle of the Megalopolis where faith is dying. We're doing something unexpected, just like Jesus. When Jesus walks into the Decapolis, it's kind of like my governor that just got voted out, Chris Christie. It's kind of like him going and walking into like a Dallas game, you know? Except that the traitor is a Dallas fan. The only good thing I'll say about Chris Christie is that he goes to places that he's unexpected, like Jerry Land over in Dallas. Maybe in that regard, he's like Jesus, not many other ways. Get him off. So this is what happens next. Remember, he leaves, he's going into the Decapolis, and this is what happens in the Decapolis. Jesus goes where he's not expected. He crosses borders into an area that he isn't supposed to care about, according to his friends, and he does something amazing. Will someone read us this amazing thing he does?
Then Jesus left the vicinity of Tyre and went through Sidon, down to the Sea of Galilee, and into the region of the Decapolis. There are some people brought to him, a man who was deaf and could hardly talk, and they begged Jesus to place his hands on him. After he took him aside, away from the crowd, Jesus put his fingers into the man's ears. Then he spat and touched the man's tongue. He looked up to heaven and with a deep sigh said to him,
Ephphatha,
which means be opened. At this the man's ears were opened. His tongue was loosened, and he began to speak plainly. Jesus commanded them not to tell anyone, but the more he did so, the more they kept talking about it. People were overwhelmed with amazement. He has done everything well, they said. He even makes the deaf hear and he can speak. Mark 7, 30.
So there's a big crowd. Again, always when Jesus shows up, people want to see. Maybe it's just the crowd of people that brought this man to him. You know, he has a reputation beyond the borders of Israel. And Jesus takes the man he's going to heal aside into a private place. But we know that what happened there, so it means that the person that saw this happen, you know, this really sounds like a firsthand account. Put his fingers in his ear. He like took a deep breath. He moistened his fingers and put them on the man's tongue. And he said something in Aramaic, Ephphatha. It sounds like a firsthand account, like historiographically. But it's real, you know, it's real intimate, you know? Why'd he put his fingers in his ear? Like, can you imagine putting your fingers in someone's ear past the age of 9, you know? It's so intimate, almost painfully so. And the man opens up to it. Jesus says, Ephphatha, be opened. And I think that's the biggest miracle that's happening here, because what the opening that happens is more than in the guy's ears and in his mouth. The opening that happens is to the whole region, that Jesus is doing something that's bigger even than just the people of God, you know, the traditional people of God. He's saying, I have something for these people too. I have healing for people that you weren't expecting. I have an opening for you. That I think that the disciples were probably opened up too. They say, Oh, okay, we can care about these people too. Oh, okay, I get that. We crossed the river, we crossed the lake, but we still care. Okay, they're getting somewhere. They were opening up. But you know, I think some people don't want to get opened up, right? Or some people, it's really hard to open up. And now I'm thinking about like just us. Like, what does it mean to be open? You know, you might feel this way sometimes. You might feel like you want to stay put. You want to hunker down. You want to tighten up, defend what little territory you have because everyone's trying to take the territory that you've been given. You know, what little space you have to stand is threatened. You know, you might, that kind of sounds like the people of Israel. And you might just feel like that in your life. There's always somebody trying to take something. Not enough space, not enough safety, you know, for you to just be so that you could be open. The way the world is going, you might often feel like staying like right where you're at. There's big forces of fear in the world. Terrorism, racism, economic disparity, nuclear brinksmanship, you know, or it could be more personal. Difficult marriages, aging parents, children with access to the internet, loneliness, insecurity coming from deep inside your psychology. You know, we know, even if this isn't like you're always how you operate, you know what it feels like to be closed. You know what it feels like to be tight. And you also know what it feels like to be open, I hope. Like, here's an example. Like when you walk into a party and like everyone there already is like circled up, you know, and they're like in their circles, they're real tight. And like when you walk in the door, it's like they don't even want to like turn around to acknowledge that a breeze is on their back from the door. They're too cool for that. They already got a super great conversation happening. No room for you. I'm way cool. So you need a really great host at that party to like run to the door. Hey, come on in. Hey, meet my super cool friends. And they would never let you in their circle if I didn't let you in. And that's fine because it's my party and I'm going to help you. I'm going to include you in this. I'm going to open up this circle. Guys, let them in. Let me introduce you. And so if you're having a party, here, word to the wise, you want your friends to be comfortable, especially if they've got a bunch of different friends. If you're in the kitchen, like getting everything ready, make sure you put someone at the door that you trust that can do that, that can break the circles and open people up and include people. Because gosh, it feels hard. Gosh, it feels hard to walk into a party and to not know anybody, right? Y'all who know me know that I'm like Mr. Outgoing, you know, like I put on a pretty big like veneer of confidence. Emphasis on the veneer though, because I feel that. It feels so hard to like get into a conversation. Once I'm there, once I'm like cracked in, you know, it's like, hey, and I can be the life of the party. But seriously, I like back down all the time. I'm just like, all right, I'm going home. I can't do this. I can't make it. I don't even want to be here. I'm closed off. I'm tight. Might as well leave. I'm done. And I'm not even gonna have any fun because I'm just gonna be worried about like trying to talk to people the whole time. Usually I'm able to get in. Usually I like force myself to do it. But you know what that's like, right? You know what it's like to feel that way. It feels horrible. It feels like you're like worth nothing. Even though you know that you aren't. Even though you know it's just like, I don't even know these people. I don't even know if I want to be their friends. But I do right now. I do want to talk to them. I want them to be open to me, and I want to like be open to them and like even have the chance. You know, I want to connect, and that's hard. Or maybe it's like at your job and you have to do a presentation and you know for a fact that the people you're about to present to don't love you. In fact, they don't like you. You know, everyone has this opportunity, and they've made it clear in various tiny microaggressions or performance reviews, whatever. And you're so tight. Like your whole body gets tight and anxious. Like you feel that anxiety in your whole self. Your knees lock up. Your fists clench. You feel so much tension in your shoulders. Your face. You can feel every muscle in your face. And there's like, you'd have to spend a long time unclenching your face to try to just settle down. You know, like that, you know what that's like, right? When you're going into something, I don't know what kind of thing you do for your job, but whenever you have to like kind of be with these people, and it's even worse if you're pretty sure that they're going to have some prejudice against you because like you're a woman or because you're a person of color or because you're like from the wrong department. You know, there's all these things that people pile up on us or that we pile on ourselves. And so we know what it's like to be tight, so we want to be opened. Jesus offering us openness, Jesus saying ephaphtha, is actually good news in a lot of different ways. If it's not just opening our ears and opening our mouth in the kind of physiological sense, it's an opening of spirit, an opening of body. That's one of the miracles that can happen right now. It could happen right now in this meeting. The Greek word that Mark uses to translate the Aramaic is dianoigo. Let's just get another language in there, you know? But I like to get the idea of even what Mark was thinking Jesus meant when he said ephaphtha, and it has this kind of, Greek's this language that has like lots of connotations, and it's a fun language to explore how these words work and how they get used, and translation itself is just kind of a fun place to like expand meaning, you know, and that's kind of what I'm doing right now. So dianoigo gets used a couple other places in the New Testament. This is my favorite one in Luke 24:45, when Jesus is walking down the road to Emmaus post-resurrection. He's walking with these disciples and they don't recognize him. And they invite him in to stay with them wherever they're staying. And he opens the scripture to them. He dianoigos the scripture to them. And their minds are opened. It has this sense of understanding. It's not like just opening a door, dianoigo. It's like opening a mind, opening a vessel to receive something. Paul uses it in Acts 17:3 as well. He's in Thessalonica, and he's trying to open the minds of the people there, the Jews there. He's reasoning with them. It says explaining very poorly in Acts 17:3 in the New International Version translation, but it might say he was prying open their minds and proving that the Messiah had to suffer and rise from the dead. This Jesus I am proclaiming to you is the Messiah. He said, when we're open, we can receive the ability to hear. You know, this is where the miracle kind of comes full circle. If we can be opened ourselves, we actually become better at hearing. And we can receive the ability to speak. We can speak the right word. I mean, you could speak, or you could just say something. You know, are you talking or are you just saying stuff? Actually speaking, actually opening someone else up, or seeing where it is that they are open to and going to that place, actually having an actual dialogue takes a bit of openness. It takes a lot of openness, understanding, safe softness. You know, Jesus had to soften the man's tongue with his own spit. It makes a beautiful thing, you know, that kind of connection. Super intimate, almost more than you can stand. Jesus takes the man aside, touches the broken places on his body. And he's in his own body too, right? Deep sigh. Y'all know Howard Pinder? He sighs like that. He's doing Jesus stuff, all right? And with him, you know, Jesus is opening up the man, and the whole territory opens up with this man. And with him, the whole world opens up. You know, on that fancy street that they made in whichever of the towns that Jesus was in, this opening that occurs there, it keeps rolling. You know, like, this is the beginning. This is like when the disciples are watching Jesus and they're learning what they're going to have to do. Oh, it's bigger than just the Jewish people. It keeps going. And it keeps going from the Decapolis in Philly to the Philly. I mean, the Philly in the Decapolis to the Philly here. You know, many years, many miles later, it's still here. And that openness is for us. And Jesus is making a way here for us to be a circle of hope. And we exist then to help others open up too. And I think we're pretty dang good at it. And the main way we do it is with our cells. Cells are these circles of 10 that meet in people's homes or sometimes in coffee shops or bars. And they're a place where we can learn to hear and speak at a very basic level. That's what we do in cells. The mechanics of a cell are we put Jesus in the center, kind of like what we've just done here, and we learn how to actually connect. We learn how to actually take care of each other and talk to each other and listen to each other. So much of talking is just saying stuff or like waiting for your turn to speak. And if you're with someone in this kind of intimate place where you get taken aside into the little cell, the cell that occurred there when the man was healed, those that got to see it, those that got to see the intimate details of the miracle, that's a cell. That's a safe place that Jesus created off to the side. And that's what our cells are too. These off-to-the-side places where we can be safe enough to open up our mouths and our ears to the other, and even to our own deep stuff. Folks who don't know how to speak, who aren't sure what they think, they get in a group like a cell, and we love it out of them. They learn to say what it is they have to say. It's not just a bunch. Like, cells isn't just for blowhards like me that need to learn how to listen. Cells are also for people that need to have a sense of what God is telling them, and they need to say something about it. You can't just sit there. No, it'd be really weird if you just sat there this whole time. There's only 9 of us here, and you're just going to be quiet the whole time? Nah. You're going to do it for 10 weeks in a row? That's just strange. And so we're not going to like fight you on it. We're going to take you aside. We're going to create a space where that actually happens. We're going to ask you a question and not want you to like have the right answer. We're going to want you to speak from your heart. Give it to us. And I think that process of learning how to listen, learning how to speak, that's the miracle that Jesus is doing among us now. And that's the miracle that did Frank in. Well, that's the miracle that got a cell into Sicklerville. Frank got into a cell, and he instantly named it. He called it Peace Cell. Cell's too weird, you know. I call this Peace Cell. Added the adjective. And he loved it so much that he ended up being the apprentice, and now he's leading a cell. Because he got to, in this like weekly connection with God and with other people, he learned what an intimate connection with Jesus is like. He learned at his kitchen table a few months ago. He had this experience that he described at his baptism. I got to baptize him, I said. And he was telling, and he got choked up because he just, the veil of reality kind of got pulled back. And he got kind of opened up. The veil of his heart got opened up. And it was like he had this pure moment of joy in this super simple way. He's just sitting at the kitchen table with his dad, who's a cancer survivor. And it just kind of, this wave of emotion came over him. And he said he was just so grateful that his dad was alive. But then it just kept rolling. And he was just so grateful for, like, the house that he was in, the chair that he was in, the fork that he was using, his brothers down the hall that he couldn't see but he knew were in the house. He had this just intense experience, and he knew that was Jesus saying to him, I'm alive, I'm here. And he was opened up to that reality. It was so good to hear him say that. And now Frank's in Sicklerville, and Sicklerville gets opened up because now there's a cell there. And hopefully it keeps rolling. It might end up a lot more places that I don't know yet. I always thought, here, this is an extra thing. I always thought that probably made the most sense to eventually, when we multiply, we'd go north along the Delaware River up towards the next big town, Burlington. I don't know, though. Maybe we're going to be in Atco. Yeah. I don't know. Atco's like in the Pine Barrens. And, you know, it's surprising, and I'm looking forward to what God's going to do, because Jesus is getting into places that we don't expect, and he's also places that we do expect. He's right here with us now.
Thanks for listening to Circle of Hope's Sunday Meeting Podcast. If you want to talk about it or get connected to a cell, you can find one under our Connect dropdown at circleofhope.net.